Today's Teisho will be on Case 50 in the Heikigan Roku. Case 50 is entitled Umon's Particle After Particle's Samadhi. Engo's Introduction. Transcending all ranks, rising above all expedience, spirit corresponding to spirit, words answering words, unless he has undergone the great emancipation and attained the great use of it, how could he rank with the Buddha and be a faultless exponent of the teachings? Now tell me, who can be so direct and adaptable to all occasions and have the free command of transcendent words? Main subject. A monk asked Umon, what is particle after particle samadhi? Umon said, rice in the bowl, water in the pail. Secho's verse, rice in the bowl, water in the pail. Even the most talkative can add nothing. The north and south stars do not change places. Heaven-touching waves arise on land. If you doubt, if you hesitate, though heir to millions, trouserless. So I want to thank everybody for coming to practice Zen this morning and sitting so deeply, sitting so well here and online. So this is a really wonderful koan. Another great koan by Cloudgate, Yunmen, Umon. Right? Umon koans, Umon will ask a question, and then when nobody answers it, he answers it himself. So a monk asked, in this case, however, a monk is asking Umon, what is particle after particle samadhi? Umon said, rice in the bowl, water in the pail. So I was struggling with this koan, 40 years ago, particle after particles samadhi. And, I was sitting on the cushion and I was saying particle after particle, particle after particle, particle. And I couldn't get anywhere. I just could not. I think several sesshins went by. And just nothing seemed to be happening. One of the ways to think about koan practice is that you're working on this koan and suddenly you have this insight, right? And it just arises in yourself. And sometimes that happens, But sometimes the koan acts like a window. You look through the koan at something else, right? If that makes any sense. And I was trying to resolve this koan by just hoping that the answer would, arise in front of me. I wasn't very creative about how I was responding to the koan. Sometimes you might have noticed that you develop the fullest response to the koan not during the meditation period, but after the meditation period. You're cleaning up in the zendo, or you're washing dishes, or you're doing something, and all of a sudden the koan comes back to you, and you have this, you realize that what I'm seeing in front of me is one way to respond to the koan, is the so-called answer to the koan. Or you'll have an insight off the cushion. And that's, you might not think about it, but it's like you're using the koan as a window to look at the world. And when you use it that way, you see something you didn't notice before. So I was stuck with this koan for, it seemed like the longest time, for a couple of sashin. And finally, Genki Roshi said, try this. It was raining. This was in the Northwest, and often, rains all the time, actually. And it was really a very rainy sashin, and he said, why don't you try this? Just listen to the sound of the rain. And I started listening to the sound of the rain, and sang particle after particle, just listening to the sound of the rain. And that went on maybe all afternoon. But then I had a deep experience, right? I mean, it was like somebody had pushed me off a cliff, and I fell into this like big emptiness, right? Just absolute stillness. And I felt absolutely centered and still, right? And I went in to see the Roshi, and I presented, I said, listening to the sound of the rain, I felt like I fell off a cliff. And, I feel absolutely still, absolutely, there's a silence inside of me that, nothing can shatter. And he said, oh, that's a pretty good response. So I finally got through with that koan. We generally aren't able to be in that mental state. One thing after another happens to us, and we become attached to what's happening, right? I had to go yesterday. My sister-in-law is in the hospital. She's probably going to pass away very soon. She has congestive heart failure. And I was going to visit her in the hospital. And I wanted to go see her before I basically had some other things to do for the day. I'm trying to get things ready to take to her in the hospital. She likes pears, so I cut up a ripe, very nice ripe pear, and she likes mangoes, so I cut a mango and put them in a plastic container. And then I'm just about to go, and my beloved cat Henry he likes to sit. For some reason, he likes to sit on top of the stove, which is like the worst place to sit. But you can't get him not to sit on the stove. And I'm getting ready to go. I'm looking at my watch. It's about half an hour to Overlook Hospital. And Henry just leans over and he throws up all over the floor. And it's like, oh no, and so I had to get all these paper towels. It's quite if you have a cat, it's quite a task, right? And wipe the floor, getting it all clean. And then I jumped in my car and I had to drive, and then there was road work, I think this is typical sort of experience. I had a projection of where things should go. And I was imagining, that I would get the fruit chopped. I also wanted to take her a laptop because she's, hospitals are incredibly boring. And so I had all this stuff ready to go. And in my mind, I would chop the vegetables, jump in the car, drive there, and everything would go according to plan. As soon as this interrupted my plans, I was upset a little bit, and annoyed, and I think this is typical, right? It's like we're arrested by events. It's like we're arrested, and once we're arrested, it's like the moment becomes like just this isolating place, right? It's possible to say we're not in the moment, but actually, you know, it's possible that really the problem is we're too much in the moment, you know? It's like when the cat threw up on the floor, it was just like I was just totally thinking about cleaning up the vomit on the floor. And, you know, then I got it all cleaned up and I got in my car and I have this image of how things are supposed to go. And each moment was like very discontinuous, you know, discontinuous. But when I was at that sesshin, it was like a different experience, right? It was a different experience. You know, in a lot of Zen literature, people say, be in the moment, be here now. There's a book on Zen called Be Here Now. And, you know, one way to experience this koan is, you know, being here now. But what does that really mean? You know, what does it really mean? Because when my cat threw up and there was vomit all over the floor, I was definitely there with the vomit, right? I didn't want to be there. When I was driving to Overlook Hospital and I was, you know, the road work was sending me off in some strange direction, I was definitely there, you know. So what does it really mean to be in the moment? I did get to see my sister-in-law, and I will maybe have a little bit more to say about that experience a little bit later. But yesterday I was listening to NPR, and they had a little art, a piece of art reporting on, I think it was All Things Considered. This is an article from The Guardian, but I just wanted to share it with you. A little bit of it. There was a composer named Eric Satie, and Eric Satie wrote a piece which takes like 3 minutes to perform, right? But he, in his instructions, he says this, it's like 8 bars or something, it's not much. This has to be performed 840 times, you know. So it's a little bit like when we recite the Heart Sutra for somebody who has passed away. You know, we repeat the sutra 5 times. Well, this is 840 times. There's a musician who's agreed to do this. His name is Igor Levit, and he's a German pianist. And basically, takes 19 hours to perform this, and the audience signs up for like a 19-hour performance, and all the tickets sold out, right? Somebody who's listening to the music said, one of the people in the audience who was interviewed said, you know, it's really not a memorable piece of music. Mr. Levit, who plays this, you know, actually does it straight. He can lie down if he gets too tired, and he can go to the bathroom, right? I guess this is not the first time he's performed this. He can actually like do this straight through, right? And one of the interesting things about the performance is that people go to hear this performance and they all come away you know, profoundly changed by the reformers, or not everybody, but a lot of people have this experience, you know, of being transformed by listening to this 19-hour totally repetitive performance, where it's just these very sort of uninteresting eight bars played 800 and, what was it, 839 times or something like that. And people come away saying it was like a trance. They say, you know, I entered like an altered state of consciousness. And, you know, for many, many people, it was like this transcendent experience, right? And I couldn't help but thinking about Zazen, right? Couldn't help but thinking about what we do. You know, when we came here this morning, Keith said, oh, it's another Saturday. He said, you know, the rhythm of these Saturdays is so wonderful. You know, and if you think about it, it's, you know, it's a little bit like performing eight bars over and over again. You know, I myself have been coming to this room for about 30 years, every Saturday pretty much, unless I'm away. And, you know, very predictable schedule. Every time you sit down on the cushion, you know, it's pretty much the same drill, right? But there's something that happens, right? Something that's transformative. It's like listening to that rain fall all afternoon. You know, when I was listening to the rain, there's nothing particularly interesting. There wasn't any lightning or thunder. It was just listening to the sound of rain. And, you know, when I started doing it, I felt annoyed that I hadn't been able to find the answer to the koan in myself, so to speak. But when I realized that, you know, that hasn't worked out, I gave this a try. You know, listening to rain, at first it's a little bit interesting. You think, I'm listening to the rain. Oh, this is very Zen. You know, I'm listening to the rain. And then, you know, if you keep listening to the rain, it becomes boring after a while. And your mind starts wandering to other things, you know, movies where there's been rain, a lot of rain. You know, there was a movie I kept thinking about called A Year of Living Dangerously, with this very cool movie from the 80s. And then, you know, that goes away and you just keep coming back to the repetitiveness of falling rain. Little by little, if you really enter the samadhi of listening to the sound of the falling rain, you know, something, you know, like this is something like this piano performance. It's like you really do enter this deep, deep, deep samadhi, right? And it's transcendent experience, definitely, right? You know, having had the experience, you know, it's taken me a while to maybe decide what must have happened to me, right? You know, I think we live in, you know, even though so much about Zen is be here now, there's definitely something to that, right? I mean, you're here now, you can't be any other place, you know? And a lot of what we do in our lives is wishful thinking, right? So, you know, if I'm sure that when my sister was told she had congestive heart failure, she wanted to hear something else, and that moment must have been a very difficult moment to be in. I'm sure she wished she were in some other moment, right? And that's very common for all of us, right? We we're in, you know, sometimes we're in a moment we just don't want to be there. And it and that kind of pulling away from the moment or withdrawing from the moment can become a kind of mental illness, you know, where we're not present a lot of the time. So I'm not knocking being in the moment, right? You know, we tend to be present in sort of a limited way a lot of the time. It's like you're sitting in a room, you're sitting across the table from somebody, but your mind is a million miles away. And they say what, they'll say something to you and you go, huh, what did you say? You know, a lot of meditation practice is learning how to be present and not having a flyaway mind that wants to be somewhere else. And when you're in the moment, it is liberating. You know, it's definitely liberating. And, you know, sometimes it's incredibly refreshing just to be in the moment. A lot of Zen practice does involve not having a divided mind, not leaving the scene of where you are, but being fully present. So I'm not criticizing that experience. But there's something else that there's another way to experience the moment. That's one way to experience the moment. There's another way to experience the moment. And that is, you know, when you begin to experience like the moment as a process. So, I mean, so the moment, you know, beginners have a struggle not to separate themselves from the moment. They have a divided mind. Learning how to be fully present in the moment is very liberating. It's a very important achievement. It's like a samadhi of nowness, right? Samadhi of now. It's like you're just here 100%. And that's definitely an important breakthrough in Zen practice. But actually, that's not all there is to the moment, right? And I would say one way to experience this koan is that it's pointing us towards another way to experience the moment. You know, and that is part of a process, right? So you know, when you listen to rain, and you know, each moment of listening to rain is pretty much the same. It can be boring, it can be annoying, but eventually you realize there's a kind of flow, right? There's a kind of unfolding. And, you know, when you are able to follow that flow, you know, it's really like transcendent experience. It lifts you out of yourself, and you're able to go forward from moment to moment without being arrested, right? Without being arrested. So you know, this idea of being stopped in is actually very important. You know, when we're stopped by the moment, when we're like trapped in the moment, it cuts us off from that flow, that process. You know, and that's what happened to me when I was on my way to the hospital and my cat threw up all over the kitchen floor. You know, I was in this, the whole universe just became cleaning up the vomit on the, you know, but there's another mode of being, right? Which is to be like in the flow. And nothing is arresting you. Nothing is stopping you. It's just this moment and then the next moment and the next moment. And, you know, we all have that, you know, we don't have to go to a 19-hour piano performance. But if we practice Zazen, you know, because we all have had, I think, or will have, moments where we experience that, that there's the experience of this now, right here, being 100%, yes. But there's also this other experience of being in the flow, you know, and a lot of Zen koans are really about people not being arrested by circumstances, not being trapped in the moment by circumstances. They're able to just keep going from moment to moment without pulling back or withdrawing. See if that makes any sense. So, you know, when you're really in samadhi, you know, you can get up and walk around. And if you practice meditation, eventually, you know, it's definitely the case that this will happen to you. At first, you know, you're sitting on the cushion, and eventually after 15 or 20 minutes or 25 minutes, you have a bit of a samadhi experience. And then you get off the cushion and your samadhi experience is gone. You know, when you have that samadhi experience, you know, you're really, it's like the moment becomes everything for you, right? But there's another samadhi experience after you've experienced that one, which is where, you know, you get off the cushion and you're still in samadhi. I remember a friend of mine, we at the Seattle Zen Center, you know, he used to catch a bus after the meditation on Wednesday night. And he called me and he said, "You won't believe what happened to me." You know, the meditation was over. I got on the bus and I was sitting on the bus and I suddenly realized I'm in deep samadhi, right? You know, that's a deeper samadhi even than being in the moment fully, because, you know, he's not being interrupted as he moves forward. It's like there's this now, and there's the next now, and there's the next now, and he's just going with the flow. And, you know, something might have happened to him at some point on his bus ride that would have stopped that, right, and pulled him back into himself. That happens, and, you know, then we just start watching the breath again until we go into samadhi. And but the experience of not being arrested by events is a deep practice. And if you know, eventually you'll be able to be in samadhi if you go for a walk. You know, you can actually be in deep samadhi on a walk. You can, you know sort of what it feels like to be in samadhi. Sometimes you can walk for half an hour in an almost thoughtless state of just attentiveness, right? Just like moving, rolling attentiveness, right? Just on, right? And this is really, I would say, something you will be able to do. But when you do it, it's a real breakthrough, right? Really very important. So, you know, one way to think about this koan is that it's about learning how to be here now, right? And that's definitely a dimension of the koan, right? What is particle after particle samadhi? And Umon says, rice in the bowl, water in the pail. Now, one way to understand what he says is rice in the bowl or water in the pail. They're examples of being fully here. But another way, I think Umon's pointing to something deeper than that, although that's a pretty good answer. Be here now. Somebody came in and said, just this. I would probably say, okay, that's a pretty good response to the koan. But, you know, koans can be responded to with more or less depth, right? So you know, there are some koans that are just not in the ballpark, right? The person just doesn't know what to do with the koan. Sometimes the person is mistaken, right? Going in a wrong direction. Sometimes the person's going in the right direction, but they could go a little farther. So sometimes with our koan training, I'll say, that's good, but stay with it and let's see if you can go a little farther. So if somebody were working on this koan with me and they came in and said, just this moment, you know, I'm in samadhi in this, I'd say, okay, that's a pretty good response. But what I might say is, can you go a little farther? And, you know, if you go a little farther, you realize, you know, this rice in, water in a bowl, rice in a pail, vomit on the floor, you know, traffic on the road, right? Not being arrested by, not being arrested at any point in the flow is awakened mind in action, right? Awakened mind in action. You know, if Buddhism were just about sitting on a cushion and entering samadhi, it would be great, it would be wonderful, it would be amazing. But you know, the fact is that it's even more amazing because, you know, in more advanced states of practice, advanced states of consciousness, you know, moment by moment, samadhi means you're in samadhi all the time. And, you know, the more you can be in that state of mind, the more confident you become that, you know, nothing is going to break your concentration. Or, you know, basically, if you can sustain that for a while, you gain a deeper sense of trust, right? I mean, one of the reasons we're derailed or we're arrested is that we're just not focusing. So I was not, you know, focusing when my cat threw up all over the floor. You know, I was just being a little undisciplined, I guess. But you know, sometimes things arrest us because we imagine that we will not be able to cope with this situation, and we lose. I love this English saying, "Lose your cool." You lose your cool. Right? It's like sometimes something happens, and you feel trapped by the circumstances, and you might get angry, or you might feel angry because you're fearful, or it's like, "Oh no, not this again." Right? So, you know, we lose confidence in our ability to maintain the flow, right? And a lot of Zen practice is about, first of all, discovering this moment-by-moment flow, and then also realizing that, you know, you have the samadhi power, you know, to sustain this. It's just you defeat yourself, right? The more you can, every time you go through a situation that's challenging and you stay in samadhi, you know, I can handle that, you know. I hope I'm making some sense, right? Years ago, there was, long ago, this was like 30 years ago, we had a sesshin in Princeton at what used to be a Catholic seminary outside of Princeton. And there are no monks there or priests there anymore. They were renting it out. They rented it out to us, and we had a sesshin there. And I had just started teaching, and one of the things I did at that time and don't do anymore is sometimes push the last sit at the end of the day, you know. So now in sesshin at 10:30, I really ended at 10:30, and I come right in and we recite the four great vows. But in those days, I would just push it a little bit. You know, if somebody were in Dokusan with me, I might let the Dokusan go on. And so I might come in at like quarter of 11. And I no longer do that, but I had this experience, like I did that one night, and then the next day somebody came into Dokusan and she was furious at me. She said, you know, you goddamn, you know, bastard. She said, you let the sit go on, you know. And she was so mad. And she said, why did you do that to us? And I said, well, you know, I said, did you make it through? And it was like, oh. She was still mad, but, you know. But yes, see, you know, you did it. You did it. You thought you would be destroyed by this experience, but you weren't. You stayed in your samadhi, your legs hurt, you wanted to go to bed, you know, but you have this power to stay in samadhi moment after moment after moment, see. And she was so mad I didn't try to communicate this. I stopped when I said, you made it through, right? You know. But I think she got the picture, right? She didn't leave the sesshin and she came to other sesshins. So a lot of Zen practice is thinking, I will not be able to handle this moment. And as soon as that happens, the flow is broken. But every time we have a moment that's challenging and we go into deep samadhi, we can move on to the next moment in our samadhi mind, see? This is the ideal, actually, Zen like ideal. So actually it's like, if you think about enlightened mind is not the mind that sits calmly on the cushion, although that can be enlightened mind. You know, enlightened mind is the mind that can get off the cushion and be in deep samadhi sort of as it rolls along from moment to moment. And a lot of koans are about like teachers trying to challenge their students to see if their students are going to get like arrested by the moment, right? Or if they're able to stay in samadhi and not, quote, lose their cool, right? It's not really about just being calm, but it's about being in some grounded in samadhi. Lin Ji was famous for like slapping people, right? And you think, what's that? I don't endorse that. But what he's really showing people is that your samadhi mind is right here, right? And there's many other koans where the teacher does something, and the teacher is going to, basically the teacher is going to hit the student, and the student slaps the teacher first, you see, and they're both realizing they're not trapped by the moment, that they can roll along in enlightened mind, right? This is like the dynamic aspect of Zen practice, right? So there's a famous koan where a master says, he puts a bottle on the floor of the zendo and he says, whoever can knock, we're opening up a new temple, whoever can respond to that bottle gets to be the master of the new temple, right? And he asks one of his most advanced students, what's your response? And the guy says, I wouldn't call it, you know, a pail of water or something. But another student walks right over and knocks it over. And, you know, this is like a better response because he's demonstrating his active samadhi, right? He's not arrested by the moment, right? Okay, so, you know, I think so much can be said about how one of the things that's misleading about thinking too much that the task of Zen is to be in this moment is that, you know, really our existence is not this moment. It's like moment by moment. It's like we're constantly in transition. Somebody asked, I think it was Shunryu Suzuki, the founder of the San Francisco Zen Center. They said, what's the essence of the Dharma? And Suzuki said, the essence of the Dharma is everything changes. Everything changes. So, being in this moment is pretty good. It's where we have being 100% here in samadhi, very good. But everything changes. This moment is already over. It's on to the next moment, see. So the reality isn't, it is like, reality is everything changes. It's like a process of unfolding. And, you know, Zen practice involves being in samadhi as things are unfolding, as they change, right? You know, I wanted to get back to my sister-in-law. You know, my sister-in-law is a really great artist. One time I shared, I put on our Sangha web, on the Facebook page, a couple of her paintings, which I just love. And, you know, she has like a heart, she has a hereditary heart issue that runs in my wife's family. And, you know, she's had a wonderful life, you know. You know, when I saw her in the hospital yesterday, it was challenging because, you know, she wasn't herself, right? I mean, as we would say, you know. She, you know, was very pale and not really with it. And, we want to think of ourselves as having like one identity, right? But, you know, when I was sitting with her and trying to get her to eat some slices of pear, she didn't want to eat. It has been my experience that people who are ready to go don't really want to eat anymore. I couldn't help but think about what she was like 50 years ago. You know, she was this very funny, energetic, you know, bohemian artist in Albuquerque. I remember once driving in her car and she was like living on like a commune in the Southwest, and she had a little Volkswagen bus, and we were going somewhere, and the roof leaked in her car, and the floor of her car had water in it, and we had to keep our feet up, you know, out of the water when we were driving. And it was so funny, she said, you know, I'm not worried about that because the floor also has holes in it, you know. And indeed, by the time we got there, the water was gone, right? It was like, she had this wonderful spirit. Sydney is her name. You know, she was really a bubbly, wonderful person. You know, the person sitting across from me, you know, you could say, well, that, you know, which is the real Sydney, right? You know, which is the real Sydney? You know, all the real Sydney. You know, this is like life, this is everything changes, right? Everything changes, you know? So there isn't a moment when we're, you know, each moment we feel like I'm me right now, but, you know, actually, I'm not the same person I was 50 years ago. And, you know, the truth is, we aren't a person, we're a process. And liberation isn't an achievement, it's a process, right? Enlightenment isn't actually an event, it's a process. And it's not a personal achievement, right? It's a process that we learn to be part of. And, you know, my personal feeling is that, you know, the process goes on and on. And sometimes the process is called Sydney, and sometimes the process is something else or someone else. You know, and once you realize that there isn't a self, there's a process. You know, it's very difficult to say where Sydney starts and Kurt stops. And, you know, it's probably the case that there is no starting and there is no stopping. There's just this unfolding. It's like, you know, in deep meditation practice, you realize, you know, the universe is like arising and vanishing moment after moment. It's like a flashing light that goes on and then flashes off and goes on and flashes off. And, you know, it's like, whose consciousness is this, right? It's maybe it's all of our, it's consciousness itself, you know, and we're just in consciousness, right? If that makes any sense. The transition goes on and on. And sometimes the transition's name is Kurt, and sometimes the transition's name is Sydney. And it never stops, see? So, you know, we're all here, we're all along for the ride, so it's really important to enjoy the ride and to be, you know, to be in deep samadhi moment after moment. Engo's introduction. Transcending all ranks, rising above all expedience, spirit corresponding to spirit, words answering words, unless he has undergone the great emancipation and attained the great use of it, how could he rank with the Buddhas and be a faultless exponent of the teachings? In other words, you know, has he learned how to go with the flow? Has he learned how to roll along in samadhi mind? Now tell me, who can be so direct and adaptable to all occasions and have the free command of transcendent words? See the following. Main subject. A monk asked Yunmen, what is particle after particle samadhi? Umon said, rice in a bowl, water in a pail, rain on the sidewalk, my sister-in-law in the hospital, on and on. Setchel's verse, rice in the bowl, water in the pail. Even the most talkative can add nothing. The north and south stars do not change places. Heaven-touching waves arise on land. If you doubt, if you hesitate, if you let things arrest your flow, you know, though you're heir to millions of dollars, you don't have any pants on, right? Trouserless.